Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to today's update on Oyster Global High Yield. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today on Tuesday, the 10th of October, 2017. I'd now like to hand the conference over to your host today, Head of Fund Platform, Bertrand Dorr. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is my pleasure to welcome you on this Oyster UCITS call on behalf of SEES Asset Management. Let me please introduce Mike Kirkpatrick. He is the portfolio manager of the Oyster Global High Yield Fund. Mike is a managing director and a senior investment professional at SEIX Advisors. SEIX was appointed as sub-manager of Oyster Global High Yield since inception of the fund in November 2011. Mike will discuss the high yield market, the positioning of the fund, and the year-to-date performance. Mike, over to you.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to cover three things. The first is why invest in high yield. The second is why invest in high yield now, and why. And the third thing is why invest with SEIX Investment Advisors through the Oyster Global High Yield Fund. So we'll start on page five to cover why invest in high yield now. And when we think about the market, we break it into three pieces: fundamentals, technicals, and valuations. And currently what we're seeing is fundamentals are very strong for most industries in high yield. And a positive fundamental backdrop is supportive of tightening spreads. But we're seeing positive fundamentals in most industries. There are some exceptions, energy being one of them, which is an area that we are finding some good value, and healthcare and retail. Retail has been an area where we've struggled to find much value. And what we're seeing on the fundamental side is positive revenue growth and EBITDA growth. And as a result, the default realizations have declined, and expectations are that defaults will continue to decline for the balance of the year and into next year. From a technical perspective, currently we would say it's neutral. The flows into and out of high yield have been slightly negative, but roughly positive. Now, the positive is on the new issue side, a lot of bonds are being tendered. So it's a lot of refinancing is what the new issuance has been used for. So it's not significant net issuance to the market. And valuations, I think that this is a topic that gets a lot of coverage. You know, where are we valuations? We still are well above where we were at historic tights in 2007, and as I mentioned, a positive fundamental backdrop continues to support valuations, and I'll talk about how we're positioning in the portfolio given where valuations are. On page six, we give you some details on the fundamentals, and what you can see is that on the top part of the page that year over year revenue growth, and you can see that that's been positive, very positive, and EBITDA growth as a result. So generally what follows is improving free cash flow, which is something that we look for, and you have risk premiums in the market declining, and you get that positive performance from the bonds. On the next page, page seven, you can see the default history. And expectations are for 2% defaults in 2017 and 2018. And quite frankly, I think those numbers might be a little bit high based on what we're currently seeing. On page eight, we plot the option-adjusted spreads versus the default rate. And you can see here that in periods of declining default rate, it is supportive of spread tightening. So that's what we've seen recently, and we think that that can continue in this kind of environment. Now on page 9, we get into why high yield. And what we've shown here is the annualized return of high yield bonds versus large cap equities and small cap equities. And you can see that high yield bonds deliver very competitive returns with less volatility. And the return per unit of risk is better than the other asset classes. So I think a lot of investors think about high yield as somewhat of an equity surrogate. And given where valuations are, we think it makes a lot of sense to rotate out of equities and into high yield bonds, just given where overall valuations are. And you don't give up a lot of the return potential, but you do take out some downside. On page 10, one of the other concerns that a lot of people have is what happens in a rising rate environment. And what we've shown here is how high-yield bonds perform in rising rate environments. And in what has happened is that high-yield bonds have posted positive returns in 12 out of the 16 periods that we studied. And we went back close to 20 years and looked at periods of rising rates and how those high-yield bonds performed. And you can see here that, as I mentioned, 12 out of those 16 periods, high yield posted positive returns. And in all but one of those periods, high yield outperformed the Barclays aggregate. And it's over on the left side of the page in first half of 2001. And what was happening was high yield was working off the excesses of the tech and telecom boom still. And we had a weak economy. The time that you want to get concerned in high yield is when there's been a lot of excessive issuance, and then we're entering into a weak economy. And we do not see those excesses in the market. And as I mentioned, the fundamentals continue to improve. Now, on page 12, we'll get into why Sykes for high yield. And I'll tell you a little bit about our firm. We have 74 people employed in our firm, with more than half of those devoted to the investment process. We are bottom-up manager, and we think that we think that being bottom-up allows you to focus on what is analyzable. When you get too much into the macro world, it becomes very difficult to predict. And I can get 10 smart people in a room, 10 brilliant people in a room, and five of them are going to say rates are going up, and five of them are going to say rates are going down. So we stick to what we know, which is business models and business fundamentals. We think that is much more forecastable. Our process focuses on a margin of safety that allows us to avoid defaults and outperform through the cycle. It also lends itself, and I'll get more into this, lends itself to a contrarian investment style. If you look at our performance, our best times of performance are coming out of periods of dislocation. In this kind of market, we see pockets of dislocation, so we're seeing some value in the energy sector, as I mentioned, and our process lends itself to a contrarian investment style to take advantage of those mispricings in the market. We are a sweet spot in size. We're, as a leveraged finance manager, we're roughly $15 billion in size, which gives us access to all of the senior members of management teams out of the issuers. It gives us the top-tier resources from the investment banks, but only a third of that is in high-yield bonds, so it allows us to actively manage the portfolio. Our assets are less than 0.5% of the high-yield universe, so one of the things that is also concerning to people is what is liquidity in the high-yield market. We are not so big that we lose that liquidity, whereas I think some of our competitors have grown so large, they just can't move. They lose their ability to move in the market. And culture, we have an average of 19 years of industry experience with our analyst teams. Our analysts are seasoned professionals, experts in their industry. We think it's very important for our analysts to stay in their industries for long periods of time. It allows them to get to know the management teams very well, study the paper trail of the management teams, which is much more important a lot of times than what they say they're going to do. It's what did they say they're going to do, and then how did they perform. And it also allows us to see, the analysts to see, how the business model performs through the cycle. So in periods of difficult times, we want to know that a business model is durable, they can generate cash in difficult times, and they're not relying on the high-yield market necessarily to refinance in a difficult time. And this team has been together through the extreme risk-off environments of 2008, 2011, and 2016. So we've been there, done that, and I think you can have some confidence in investing with us for the future. On page 13, we show a portfolio breakdown. You can see that on the left side, we show our portfolio versus the index by region. You can see that we're overweighted in U.S. issuers and U.S. dollars. And I'll talk a little bit more about that, why we're seeing the most value there. Our analysts spend about a quarter of their time on non-U.S.-based issuers. So whether that's companies in Europe, Canada, just anywhere outside the United States. So we spend a lot of time and devote a lot of resources there. Just at the moment, we're not finding a lot of value there. On the right side of the page, we show our portfolio by rating. And the way we think about how we have the portfolio position now is somewhat of a barbell. And I think this is kind of typical, unless it's an extreme dislocated market. But we think in the bulk of the market, we should be thinking about playing defense at the moment. So we're more in solid single Bs and double B type credits. And then we barbell that with our credit selection. And a lot of that credit selection at the moment is in the energy and financial space. Now, when we go through the attribution, what you'll see is those are the two big industries that have hurt our performance on a relative basis this year. Now, the names that have hurt our performance are names that we continue to own, and in most cases are names that we've added to at lower levels. So bonds that have declined in value should become cheaper, not more concerning. So, and you can see our triple C exposure, we continue to take that lower, and as of today, we should be a little bit underweight triple C's. So on the next page, page 14, you can see our industry breakdown. I mentioned the energy sector has been a big area of investment for us. We've added throughout the course of this year with concerns about specifically what oil prices are doing, and I'll talk a little bit more about some of the credits we own. And then the bank, finance, insurance, it's been a big area for us. The reason it is an underweight relative to the index is because of the significant European banks that we don't own. It's a lot of U.S.-based financial companies. So on page 15, you could see what we've talked about here is our non-U.S. exposure. We had a peak of 31% in the second quarter of 2012, and more recently we're down to 13%. And that is a function of where we're seeing value. And I'll give you a quick example in a second. Even in our U.S.-based high-yield portfolios, our non-U.S. exposure has dropped from 14% to 11%. So some of the reasons for underweighting, concerns about fundamentals in emerging economies, 19% of the benchmark, Brazil 5%, Russia 3%, Turkey 2%, And the big one for us is the valuations in European high yield. It's just it's very challenging to find good value in European high yield, given where spreads are. And I'll give you a quick example. Telecom Italia is a name. It's the biggest issuer in the European high yield index. And the bonds, the 10-year euro bonds, trade in low 2%. So in line with the 10-year U.S. Treasury to even a little bit less. And there's a lot of fundamental challenges facing that company. A lot of changes, the WindIM and Hutchison mergers forced them to divest some assets. Iliad, which is a caused a lot of disruption in the French market, is taking on those assets. So there's a lot of uncertainty into how the wireless sector is going to play out there and how the fundamentals are going to improve. And you also have Italy Open Fiber. So it's fiber to the home. It's a big investment from a state-owned fund and a utility that's going to create a lot of disruption on the wireline side. And Telecom Italia has been talking about spinning off assets. And quite frankly, the Italian economy is not really conducive to them being able to raise prices. So there's a significant number of fundamental challenges facing that company. The free cash flow generation as a percent of debt is in the low single digits at the moment. So a lot of challenges, and at low 2% yields for a 10-year bond, we do not think you're being compensated. Now, one that we do own on the U.S. side is Cincinnati Bell, that generates free cash flow to mid-single digits as a percent of debt, and management has a very strong track record of being able to take that cash flow and reinvest back in the business and generate significant returns. Now, the bonds have widened out recently because they made an acquisition, but we have a lot of confidence in this management team, and the bonds are in yield 7.5 to 8%. So 7.5 to 8% with a management team we're much more comfortable with, a fundamental outlook that we think we can analyze much better than what's going on in Telecom Italia versus, and it's, you're talking 7.5 to 8% yields versus low 2% yields. To us, it's a no-brainer. On page 16, so this just shows overall valuations of U.S. high yield versus versus European high yield. And you can see from this graph that both on an OAS basis and a yield basis that we are at fairly low levels, suggesting that U.S. high yield as a market does offer some better value. Now, give you a quick example on page 17 of something that we own. It's a big position for us, and give you some insight into our process. The big thing with us is we want to know how a company can pay us back even if the high yield market is not open to them. So we look for companies that have some lever that they can pull, whether it be a different market or an asset that can be sold, to be able to generate cash in a difficult market. NationStar Mortgage fits that very well. So one of the things we look at is free cash flow. The company's operating cash flow as a percent of debt is in excess of 20%. So that's a lot of cash that they throw off in a short period of time, that if they had a bond that needs to that is maturing, they can stop reinvesting that cash back in the business and use it to pay off debt. The other thing that they can do is NationStar Mortgage has assets on the balance sheet that are fairly liquid that can be sold. So they can sell those to different parties, whether it be another mortgage servicer or there's actually REITs set up that invest in what's called excess mortgage servicing rights. I won't get into too much detail, but there's a number of levers that this company can pull to generate cash in a difficult environment, and that is something that we spend a lot of time talking about. And the more levers they have to pull, the cheaper the bond, the more we like it. page 18, what we show here is some portfolio characteristics. On the left, bottom left of the page, we show some of our biggest positions. iStar and NationStar are two financial companies. Ensco is a UK-based offshore driller. We think that Ensco is very well run, has some very strong assets. Offshore drilling, while it's going through a very difficult time at the moment, is not going away, and the stronger, better operators with the better cost positions are going to continue to increase market share. And Ensco generates free cash flow, and they're focused on, well, they made an acquisition, but generally speaking, they're focused on using that cash to reduce debt, which is something that we like to see. Chesapeake Energy is obviously an energy company, and MGM, we've taken that down more recently, but is a hotel and casino operator. And then on the right side of the page, you can see some of our biggest underweights. We talked about Telecom Italia, Gazprom. It's just not a lot of value there, and even SoftBank. You know, we haven't really been comfortable with SoftBank's allocation of capital. Frontier is a very fundamentally challenged wireline operator. Those bonds have performed very poorly recently. And Tenet Healthcare is a name that we've owned in the past, but we sold recently because the bonds have traded up quite a bit and it hit our price target. So we decided to get out of it and reallocate that capital. On page 19, we show our performance characteristics, and you can see that we've had strong performance for 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, and since inception periods. And we also show our calendar year performance. Just to highlight, you can see that 2012 was a strong year, and that's following the back half of 2011. If you remember, over the summer of 2011, the S&P downgraded the United States from AAA. Then there was some concerns about the European Union not making it, and it created a lot of dislocation in the back half of 2011. We took advantage of that in 2012. And then again in 2015, it was the energy sector that was going through some difficult times. It created a lot of dislocation in the market. We took advantage of that to post very strong numbers in 2016. And then our year-to-date attribution, as I mentioned, we have this barbell strategy. So the one piece of the barbell is we're looking to play more defense, very solid companies no matter the environment. We're looking to clip a coupon. And then we have our credit selection piece. And one of those areas is in energy. And these are generally names. The only exception, the only name that we don't currently own is EP Energy. But Hornbeck Offshore, California Resources are names that we've added at low levels. We continue to like those, but in the short term, they've hurt our performance. That's been partially offset by Chesapeake, Lynn, and Petrobras. Petrobras has been a very strong performer this year. But California Resources is another example of a company that when they go through difficult times, they can stop their capital spending and generate cash. And in 2000, and just to give you an example, in 2014, their capital spending was in excess of $2.25 billion. In 2015, it went down to roughly $500 million. And in 2016, they dropped it to $75 million. So, and they're going to manage within their cash flow going forward. So, now the stronger oil prices have helped them, so they'll probably pick up their capital spending a little bit, but that's the kind of lever we want to see, companies that can stop spending and start generating cash in difficult times. And then the other area you can see that's a big part of our credit selection in that's hurt us in the short term, but we continue to like it, is Walter, or our financial sector, and Walter Investments is a big area there. It's another mortgage servicer. They're probably going to have to restructure their balance sheet. We are going to be a participant in that. But the bonds are in the 50s, and we think we're going to get at least 80 cents on the dollar. So we hope to have that figured out. You know, we'd like to see it by the end of the year, but we're not necessarily in control of that. So certainly within the next 6 to 12 months. But that's that all, and then cash is the other big detractor. And that's just that's really a function of a lot of bonds being called and it throwing off cash, and it just takes us a little while to get it reinvested. Then on page 21, some of the attribution analysis, you can see the European euro and the pound sterling has been areas that have shown positive selection. From an attribution perspective, the biggest area of negative has been in the United States, and it really comes from the energy sector and the financial sector, again, areas that we continue to like, and attribution by region. Canada and the United States, Canada is a big energy issuer, so it also plays into that same industry theme. And then down below, you can see attribution by ratings, with the biggest one being the cash that we hold on the balance sheet. So with that, I will pause and see if there are any questions.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. And if you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And you do have a question from the line of Michaela Stittis. If you could please ask your question.
Hiya. Can you please let us know what's your view on the M&A activity, especially in the U.S. at the moment? And also, if I can have a second question, what is your view on the tax reduction impact we're going to see on U.S. corporations, and which sectors do you think are going to be beneficial of a potential tax cut in the U.S.? Thank you.
So on the M&A front, I think a lot of companies have been waiting to see how the new administration's policies will unfold. So it's having said that, I think that it is a more friendly environment for M&A once we get through some of those uncertainties. But it's, you know, going back 6 months, we were hearing a lot of companies were just on hold waiting to see what the tax policy would be, what the, you know, what other kinds of, you know, policies that the new administration might have before they were to act. Now, there's been discussions of Sprint and T-Mobile merging, which is something that the Obama administration did not allow. So now they're going to give it another shot to see if they can get through. So I think it's going to be a more friendly environment for M&A once we get through some of this, you know, once we have more certainty with what the tax policies are going to look like. What was the other question? With the tax policy. So from what I've been reading, I mean, we're still waiting, but what I've been reading is that more capital-intensive type businesses are going to benefit more. So we'll have to see, you know, we want to wait until we get the details before we start trying to guess and anticipate. You know, those capital-intensive type businesses tend not to fit our process very well, because they tend to be businesses that have very high fixed costs and constant capital spending requirements. So those companies don't have very good, as a general statement, the companies don't have very good return on invested capital type profiles. So and they don't perform well in difficult markets. So we're waiting and seeing, but I think overall it should be a positive development.
There's currently no further questions on the lines.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
On behalf of Seed Asset Management, thank you for your interest in Oyster Global High Yield and for your time today. Have a good afternoon.
That does conclude the conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.